Hello and welcome back to Your Property Podcast. My name is Michelle Cairns and today we've got with us John Poulston-Jones. Hi, John.
Hey, Michelle.
So, John, we met a few years ago now when you moved up to the Cheshire area, Northwest, and you're looking for some deals. You were looking to get into property and we connected through some networking meetings and did some coaching together and you were kind of not you had an idea of where you wanted to get to, but you weren't really sure of the first steps and what the plan was for to get going, I suppose. And a few years later, here you are. You've got a couple of properties under your belt and different strategies. And I see you on social media, and it's great to see that you have been consistent in growing the property business and achieved some of your goals. So tell us about them. Tell us about yourself. And how did that transition work from full-time employment into property?
Yeah, well, thanks for those kind words. That was, and I think you were probably one of the first people I met when we relocated back from, I lived in London, relocated back up to North Wales, which is where I'm based, to spend some more time with my family, et cetera, et cetera. So, and at the same time, that was at the start of 2020. And I think that's where we first met. And I went to a couple of the PIN networking meetings. And this was just before lockdown. So just before they shut down. So it was really good timing that I got to meet people face to face, including yourself. So made those contacts, and I knew I wanted to invest in property. Had a small amount of savings, but as you say, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't really have a clear plan, and I'm quite a detailed person, and I like to have an idea of what the steps are in terms of achieving the goal. I knew what the goal was, to have generate some cash flow through property, but I didn't really know what that looked like, and that's where I really needed some help with. And luckily yourself and a few others came to my assistance and really helped me nail down what that means.
Well, it's really interesting that you say about being a detailed person, because I know that you're very process driven and detail driven as well, which is I think it's more common to interview people who have a bit more on the creative side, in terms of they've got the big vision and they're kind of just going out there and throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. I thought, let's get you on and talk about actually the process. So before we met, did you know about all the different education, there's different property strategies like purchase lease options and rent to rent? And did you know what could be done, or did you just kind of have the goal and think, okay, well.
So I had absolutely no idea, which is. It's bad, because I worked in a bank, so I worked in finance for 20 odd years. So you'd expect that when you say that, everyone thinks, oh, you're going to be totally familiar with how mortgages work and how you refinance properties and this, that, and the other, and stuff that you talk about now, and it seems so obvious. But at the time, I was absolutely clueless. And I was at a bit of a turning point in my life. So I knew I didn't want to work. Be an employee for any longer, basically. Excuse me. So then I thought, what can I do? What transferable skills have I got? And that was a pretty short list at the time. But when I think back now, it's actually a lot longer. And I think maybe I sold myself a little bit short in that, because I had a number, quite practical, good with people, good with numbers. So all of the things that really tick the boxes in property, which I think is really about being structured, about building relationships, about taking small steps forward every day, which is all the stuff that I'm quite good at and sort of proud of myself for. So yeah. when I started looking around and thinking, what can I do? And I already owned one buy to let, which I'd bought about 10 years previously and done, accidental landlord sort of situation. But I was just so clueless. So I'd bought it, it built up some equity, although not really that much, because it wasn't, the capital appreciation wasn't great. The area it was in, it was under rented. It needed money spending on it, which I had an agent managing, and they managed the sort of the refurbishment incredibly poorly. So it probably cost me twice as much as it should have done, which pretty much wiped out most of the profit that it made during my ownership. So I just thought to myself, property sounds great, but hang on, my experience with property hasn't really been the best? What, you know, what could I do differently? And that's when I started sort of investigating it and reading up about it and scratching the surface. And once I'd done that, it was just sort of blew me away. And it was that light bulb moment where, you know, you, number one, you can recycle your cash. Number two, you can leverage. Number three, you can use other people's money. You can use investor finance. Number four, you don't necessarily have to pay for a property on day one. So there's all of these things which I didn't even know existed. Came, you know, I found out about and read up on, and yeah, it was a real eye opener.
And how did you go from, you said about scratching the surface, but all these different options, to go to actually taking the plunge and making, you know, getting some deals over the line? Because I think what a lot of people find is once they understand what's possible, they get very overwhelmed, and yeah, then they get stuck, and then there's this paralysis by analysis, and which one is the right one for me? They yeah, all sound great.
I totally agree. I think that's and that's something that I was aware of, especially when you start looking and you see that there's so many different options available and so many different things you can do. And it's, you know, you sort of get, you know, you read up on one and think, oh, that's brilliant, I'm going to do that. And then you look at another, oh, that's even better, I'm going to do that. And you can easily see yourself getting distracted. And I think a lot of people still do get distracted. So what I thought I'd do, so, you know, again, read up and thought, right, you know, you need to get yourself a high level goal. Is it, you know, do you want to generate cash flow or do you want to generate capital? So that's pretty basic. Start with, you know, start break it down into small chunks. So, right, I need to generate some cash flow because I'm not working. So I need to have some money coming in. Okay, how do you do that? So the most basic thing is you could buy a buy to let, put 25% deposit down, get a mortgage, rent it out, and then that's your cash flow. So that's at one end of the scale. And then there's various other, obviously the other strategies I was looking for. And at the time, HMOs caught my eye. And I think this was a little bit of vanity as well. I was so, in terms of doing my research, I was spending a lot of time on social media, following accounts that had the, you know, posted up nice pictures and were doing, you know, it seemed to be pretty active. So I was quite into that. And then so I'd see someone doing an HMO, for instance. So then I'd start researching and finding out what is an HMO. I knew about shared house and I'd lived in shared houses, but the whole concept of co-living and ensuite bathrooms and all that sort of stuff, I wasn't too familiar with. So started reading up about those and seeing how that it really was turbocharging the cash flow, and that you could actually add a lot of value to a property by converting it. But then again, once you scratch the surface, it just creates so many more questions, and you get into the whole Article 4 and planning and all that sort of stuff. Which, so carried on reading up about that, and once I'd looked around at quite a few different strategies and knew what, you know, I knew I wanted to increase my cash flow, then I came to the conclusion that, right, I wanted to buy a couple of buy-to-lets just to generate some steady income. And then I've got enough money to be able to buy a couple of one or two, depending on how much it costs and how much work is required, buy one or two HMOs, which will then all of a sudden take me to the cash flow that I require. So great. Okay. Right, how do I go and do that? That's the next question. And I think that's when I was listening to podcasts, I went to the networking meetings, and I had some real sort of fundamental questions. And I think this is what you sort of alluded to at the start, that I didn't really know. I knew what I wanted to do, so I knew the goal was generate cash flow, right, how do I do that, get some HMOs, but I didn't really know what that means. I looked at people who were buying houses and converting them and putting in all these bathrooms and all the rest of it. I didn't really know whether that was the way to go, or whether just to buy an HMO, or, you know, what the fundamental research that I need to do. What's the demand like? I was thinking about investing, you know, I didn't want to invest too far away from home. So North Wales and then Chester. And North Wales is very different in terms of the, you know, the regulations and the Welsh government. So that sort of put me off a little bit. So I thought, okay, Chester's the place. So I've got my strategy, got my area, but what about all the detail, you know, about Article 4, about converting, you know, how much does it cost? How do you run a project? All that sort of stuff. And that's when I thought, I'm going to be there. I need to get a mentor here. This is, I need to fast forward all of these decisions and these questions and try and get someone who can really help me answer them.
Yeah. And how did that move you forward in, you know, how quickly in terms of the properties that you started to buy and acquire?
So, yeah. So I think that probably helped me take about six steps, as opposed to just doing one step if I'd have been by myself. So, you know, I wrote down a big list of questions, and then within two or three days. I think I'd gone through all of those questions. Whereas if I was doing it myself, just trying to research demand, trying to research the good areas, trying to research what the difference between a professional HMO and a student HMO and all these bits and pieces, all these little nuances that if you get it wrong, it can be quite costly or quite, especially either in terms of financial cost or time. So those are the things that I really wanted to understand. And I think that's what I did. And it's funny because then you get to, okay, you answer all the questions, you think, right, I want to buy some HMOs. These are the areas I'm interested in. Okay, let's go and do it. So you start looking around. And quite a few people, including yourself, had said to me, oh, direct to vendor is quite a good way of getting these properties, especially HMOs, because they tend to be professional landlords. It's not just buying from the general public or someone who wants to sell their house. So direct to vendor. And I thought to myself, oh, that can't be right. Sending out letters to people, who on earth is going to reply to that? And I totally disregarded it to start with. I started thinking about it, and more people said, oh yeah, direct to vendor. I never read up about it. And then I thought, because I'm a little bit stubborn as well, and I thought, all right, I tell you what, I'll send out some letters just to prove what a waste of time it is. So I did that. So this is my first direct to vendor marketing campaign, which was, I think I got a template online somewhere, got the HMO register, and sent out these letters. And bearing in mind, it was probably the absolute perfect time to send them out during the lockdowns, the estate agents were closed. But I think I sent about 100 letters in the first round, thinking if I get one response, I'll be happy. And I must have got about 20 responses, all of which were saying, yeah, when can you come around? I'm interested in selling. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And even the ones that weren't necessarily suitable, people were so generous with their time and so accommodating to my questions that I learned from the conversations. The first conversation is always a little bit awkward and you don't really know what to say. But once I'd had two or three conversations with landlords who were looking to sell, it was absolutely fine. And I was able to sort of recycle the information that I'd learned from the previous conversations and sound like, a little bit more knowledgeable than I actually was. And So that was a great tip. And I did have to swallow my pride and admit that that was probably one of the better strategies that I've done. And on the back of that, I've got two HMOs that I bought around that time, and they both came from direct to vendor letters. So, so thank you very much for that push there.
Well, that's what a coach is for, right?
Exactly,
Okay, so you've got the two HMOs and you still had the one buy-to-let. And where are you up to now with the portfolio?
Yeah, so I bought another buy-to-let. So this is, I think, where it comes down to your own personal circumstances. So as I was, there's always a big question, I think, especially for people who are just starting out, whether to buy property in your own name or in a limited company. And that was, so I spent some money to speaking to an accountant, got some advice, and just to try and understand what the differences are. I read about it, but I really wanted to get some to the bottom of it and with my circumstances as well. So the advice I was given was to own a couple of buy-to-lets in my own name, because I wasn't earning anything, and that would take me up to my tax threshold. And then anything else, especially HMOs, anything sort of business type related, then put those in a limited company. So that's what I did. So I bought one more buy-to-let in my own name, and then the rest I've put into the limited company. So to answer your question, so I bought the two HMOs, which one required a bit of work, the other required a full refurb. In actual fact, the one that required a bit of work has actually had the full refurb now as well, because the bit of work just uncovered a whole load of other problems. So it's always the case. And then after that, I then started getting a bit more confident. Still looking for cash flow, but I've been buying blocks of flats. I've got a couple of serviced accommodation units. I've got a commercial mixed use building with a restaurant and some more flats. And a couple of bits of land that have come my way, which haven't actually cost that much there. So that's always a bonus. And I'm just sort of dipping my toe into social housing now as well. So some of the properties I've got, I've got two that I've rented out to a social housing provider. So I'm looking to expand on that in 2024.
Well, I love it when you get to the point where you lose track of what's in front of
Yes.
you.
Like,
That's
there
when you
is
know you're like,
it.
right, okay, I really have come quite far now.
When you write it all down just before the call, I thought, oh, I'll just make a bit of a list. And it was, yeah, you always, so that, is that one of those moments where you actually take a breath and take a step back and think, oh, actually, yeah, there's a lot been happening over the past 2 or 3 years.
And so, do you want to give us an idea? Because like you said at the beginning, you had a pot of money, and some people do have a pot of money. They're not sure what to do with it, and I think sometimes they are, you know, it's their life savings, and quite rightly so, they're protective over it, and sometimes it stops them from moving forward as quickly as they might otherwise, because they've got a whole a huge checklist of things that it, you know, it needs to be, you know, the money needs to perform in a certain way with a certain type of property, etc. So there are some people with pots of money. I've gone off on a tangent now, and some people without. But do you want to just give us an idea of what you had and how far it got you? Because I know you've worked with private investors as well, and obviously you've gone on far beyond what that initial pot of money was.
So I started off and I allocated out about £100,000, I think, in cash to invest, which is, you know, a fair amount of money when you think about it. And it took me a long time to save that. So I was quite protective over it. And I also, the first buy-to-let, as I said, I had some equity in that, so I was able to, when once I realized that, you know, you could actually get a decent rate. This was when it was really good rates as well. So I pulled some out, remortgaged that place and pulled some money out. So I had, that was my, I guess, my working capital. And then from that, I needed to, I bought the so the first HMO I bought was on just a standard mortgage, HMO mortgage, 75% deposit. With the product was able to do a cash advance. So once you've done any work, which I think that the work wasn't enough to make it unmortgageable, although it was sort of borderline, I'd say, because it needed it had when I bought it had a kitchen and bathrooms and all the rest of it, but those very quickly got ripped out, which I don't the mortgage company knew what I was doing, but this is something you just need to be careful of if you are just getting a standard mortgage as opposed to bridging and then moving on to a term product. So yeah, so they were happy with me to do that. So I did that, did all of the work which I used my pot of money for, and then I refinanced and pulled some more money out. So that's what I did with the first one, and then that enabled me to buy the second HMO. But then that pretty much used up my cash then, and I thought, well, hang on a minute, this isn't great. I'm at the very start of this, and I've not got any cash left. So there must be another way to do it. And that's when I started seeing how people this term gets bandied around other people's money, which I think is a you need to be a little bit wary of, because whenever I have borrowed money from investors, I've always treated that. Is that just put it on a you know, treated that with more importance than my own money. And if anything, you know, if anyone gets paid back first, it's always the lenders that have entrusted me with that. So I think the next one I bought was it's actually a flat in Chester, central Chester, a friend of mine that was selling it, and the sale had fallen through a couple of times. And I thought, well, I haven't got any money for it, or I've got, you know, £10,000, whatever I had left over, which isn't enough to buy it. And what I wouldn't mind doing is doing a sort of a bridging type model where, you know, you buy the property for cash, add value 6 months later, then you refinance and you try and you can get the uplift. So one of the first investor I had lent me the money for that for the purchase, and then I used my money for the refurbishment. I think I scratched around and got a bit more, and then refinanced it after that period. So what I try and do is borrow money for a 12-month period. And then that allows me 6 months to do any refurbishment, add any value, and then you've owned the property for 6 months. So it gives you a bigger choice of lenders, and then 3 months to refinance, and then a 3-month contingency, because one of those two prior tasks always takes longer. So and then after 12 months, then I pay the investor back. So that's my model, and that's what I've pretty much rinsed and repeated for the other projects that I've done.
Right. And working with investors, you said it quite casually. Well, you know, I ran out of my own money, so I had to go and get some investors. But had you had any experience of working with investors before? And what was that like to go into the world of raising private finance?
Yeah, that was it was interesting. And again, read up about it, and I've seen people were doing it. So, and I felt very confident in my own abilities because I'd managed these two projects to start with, and you know, definitely added value, and I knew what, and I knew that the deal that came along, so I had a good deal to I suppose to base this off, and I knew that I was getting the property for a good price. It was in a great location. It's in the center of Chester. Anyone listening knows Chester, but it's a walled city. So within the center, is the space is limited. And this apartment had a parking space, which is a real bonus. And I knew I could have either rented it out just on a standard AST or used it for serviced accommodation. So I had two exits as well. So that's always critical. So I knew it was a good deal. I knew that I was getting it for a good price. So, and I knew other people were raising money, because I think that's something that always stops people from raising private finances, that, you know, you think to yourself, well, why would anyone lend me money? But then you just have to go back to the basics. Number one, are you a trustworthy individual? You know, I like to think so. Number two, have you got a good deal that will enable you to pay the money back? And number three, does that deal stack up? If you're charging X amount of interest, does it cover that? And does it leave any profit for yourself? And if all of those are tick, 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 then great. Then that gave, and the answer was yes. So that gave me the confidence then to, you know, follow the usual, you know, the stuff that everyone talks about, the process, which I'd already learned the process does actually work for my direct to vendor letters. So it was telling everyone what you do, asking for money, but offering an investment, shifting that mindset to say that you're not asking people for money, you're offering people an opportunity. And that was another big one. Once it worked out, that was the case. You know, everyone talks about don't put money on a pedestal, which is true, because there's so much cash out there, so many people who've got savings that aren't doing anything, that not only will they earn more interest, but I think people actually like to help and like to be, you know, part of something that's going on. So I've definitely experienced that. So yeah, and then I think I was waiting. So I knew that I needed to raise some investment. I sort of waited until I'd finished one of the projects, just so I had something tangible and I could prepare an investor pack and I could show, look, this is what I've done. This is what I paid for it. This is how I've added value. This is what it's worth now. This is the cash flow it's generating. So I could have something physical that I could put in front of someone and say, look, this is not just me coming up with an idea. This is something I've done before and it works. And then, yeah. And then I just, you know, approach various people that I know, and it's snowballed since then.
So the investors that you've ended up working with, have they all come through your existing network, that people that you've come out of the property investor from the banking world? And
yeah.
Were there people who kind of said, well, you know, I think a lot of people's fear, if they've got a corporate job or they've got a job that's very different than working with investors, they have this fear that the investor might think, well, they don't have the experience or they don't have enough credibility. So how did that go in terms of you presenting yourself as a credible property investor?
Yeah, that's a good one. And I think that sort of touches back on just going through the basics again and looking what you've done. And I think that will maybe be harder to do on if you've got no track record, if you're coming up to your first deal and you're looking to borrow money on that, as opposed to if you've done, you know, you've already done something, or you've been going 6 months, you've sourced a couple of deals or whatever it is. As long as you've got something to be able to show, then I think you should look at that yourself, and that should give you confidence that yes, you can do it, and yes, you can offer value to someone who's got some money that they want to increase the returns on.
Yeah, I agree. And I always say to people, you know, whether if you don't have a deal, you've got to start somewhere. So whether that's working with other people and, you know, helping them on their deals, or whether that is getting training and sharing what you're learning, and then that will give you the confidence as well. So there's lots of things that you can do.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's almost looking at what's your offering, what's your USP? Is it that you've got, you know, more time than someone that's working full? I think it's back when I was working full time, I had no time at all. I was, you know, doing long hours. I had some money that I was going to invest. I wish I'd known about this 10, 20 years ago, because I had some money to invest. I just didn't even know it was an option. And I would have been more than happy to lend money to myself now, because I didn't have the time to do it. I didn't have the knowledge to do it. So those two things are within your power to demonstrate that, you know, you've done some training, you've gone and got yourself a mentor, you've got, you know the market, into your local market inside out, all of these things are sort of something that separates you from the next person, and that's something that you can demonstrate through, having a conversation with someone, building up a relationship with someone. And I think that's critical.
And you mentioned there about, working long hours in the previous life in the corporate world.
Yeah.
How is life different now then? So what do your kind of day-to-day look like with managing the properties? Do you manage them all yourself, or have you got agents?
Yeah, so I started off, and I'm doing this full time now. I don't have any other job. So I started off and I was very, very hands-on. So I was managing all the projects myself. I was managing the properties myself. And I quite quickly realized that wasn't sustainable. So what I've been trying to do, I read a great book called Who Not How, which is working out who can do various things. So me going and loading skips is probably not the most efficient use of my time. So who can you get to do that instead? So that's what I've been focused on for over a year, is really trying to delegate as much as possible and putting a time value on my time. And then does this task, is the task lower or higher than that? If it's lower, then get someone else to do it. If it's higher, then great, do it yourself. So that's really what I've been focused on. So the tasks, so the two HMOs, I was managing those myself, but that's so time consuming, and it's something I think I've realized now that it's not my passion. Dealing with HMO tenants is definitely an acquired art.
It took you this long to realize.
It did. So now I've got an agent that manages the two HMOs. I've got a couple of serviced accommodation units, which have both got, one's got a really, really good cleaner and a sort of, which, and she basically manages it. I do everything else, but again, who not how. I've got a channel manager, which is another light bulb moment, that all of the things when I first started, and I was thinking, oh, this would be, make a good essay, right? How does this work? Right, I'll do it myself. And I was sending out emails and I was welcoming people and all that sort of stuff, and it was so time consuming, whereas now the process is in place and just everything's automated, so I don't really have to touch it. The pricing's done, the bookings are done, the review, it automates the reviews, automates all the communication, and then the cleaner does everything else. So it's nice and smooth, and that's what I'm aiming for. And then the various buy-to-lets I've got, be they single buy-to-lets or blocks of flats, again, they pretty much take care of themselves now. There's sometimes there's issues, weather isn't great around here, and so I've had a lot of roof issues recently, but again, that's more just coordinating the trades just to go and get stuff fixed. Yeah.
And so I guess it's life on your terms now, more flexible, yeah, and the freedom,
yeah,
to
totally,
spend
totally
with your family. And
So take the kids to the bus stop in the morning, pick them up, go to, do, they have a coffee morning at school, I can go and do that. It's definitely life on my terms, as you say.
Yeah. And what does that feel like to go from the previous life, corporate world, into now?
Yeah, it's good. It's interesting, because I suppose you forget how it was. And I used to, when I think back, my life was so different. I used to wake up really early in the morning. I used to cycle into work from, I used to live in Southeast London, cycle into the city, maybe do some exercise before work, and then do my job. And 6-7 o'clock, used to cycle home, and then have the evening, get back in time for the kids' bed, and have a couple of hours to relax, and then repeat. And then the weekends have come, and you're so sort of frazzled after all of that, that it took a while just to decompress. And that was just on a cycle. And the big thing I've noticed is every single holiday, especially either the longer holidays, so in the summer or at Christmas, I'd always get sick, just because everything was just saved up until that point. And then my body would just sort of shut down, and then I'd pick up whatever bug going around, and then I'd just feel awful for 2 weeks, and then it would be time to go back to work again. And oh God. So yeah, so that's the biggest change I've seen, I think, is that I want to have time to do what I want. But then when the holidays come around, I'm sort of feeling fresh and ready for the holiday, rather than totally burnt out and just looking to just get away from everyone for 2 weeks.
Yeah, make the most of it. Okay, so looking back, obviously you've gone through this journey quite methodically, doing a lot of research and planning everything out. So in hindsight, would you have done anything differently, knowing what you know now?
I don't think I would. There's a couple of purchases that I made that I probably wouldn't have done with hindsight, but at the time they looked like good deals, they stacked. everything was looking good, but then the market over the past year hasn't been too great for two places that I'm selling. So with hindsight, I wouldn't have done those, but I've taken a lot of lessons. I think that's how I'm trying to keep positive. Lots of lessons and everything else. No, I don't think I would have done anything differently. It's all been not everything's worked out perfectly. There's always been challenges, but then I've hopefully been able to build on those and not make the same mistake again. That's a golden rule. Don't keep on making the same mistakes. See.
Yeah, it's these are just stepping stones, aren't they? And at the beginning, you can't know everything, so you're always in that learning phase. Well, I think you always are anyway, but you certainly make fewer and fewer mistakes as you go on, you'd like to
Yeah.
think. And it's yeah, you wouldn't get be here now without those. And I'm sure that that's the property can be very forgiving if you hold the properties long enough, and where you've as long as they're making cash flow and you haven't lost any money on it. And you know what, even if you do sometimes, if you just hold out for
Yeah.
for the long term, then it recovers, doesn't it? So
I think it's a good point that sitting on the sidelines and not making a decision is probably the worst thing you can do. So, the same as, if someone would have said to you, would you, the property you bought in 2020, 2021, if you hadn't have done that, what would have happened? All of the sort of the doomsayers who were talking about the market crash every opportunity. If you don't do anything, then you'll never benefit. So I think that's one of the key things is, okay, do your research and work out what you want, but once you have decided, then take some action and actually get on with it. Otherwise, as you say, sit on the sidelines or too much analysis, and you don't do anything, and then you kick yourself in 2, 3, 5 years or whatever, and you haven't moved forwards.
Yeah, and even if it's not the deal of the century, actually, what it does give is momentum. It gives you, experience. It gives you just, something to talk about with investors, and you can talk and you say, in hindsight, yeah, I would have done differently, but we can't all be predicting interest rates and skyrocketing and energy prices and all these other things that are going on. So, you just have to make the best decision that you can at the time and
And
do your
there's
due
no such thing as
diligence,
a
and then.
perfect deal as well. I think everyone holding, especially the first one, you mentioned at the start that people have got, let's say, got a pot of money and they have so many different requirements for it, and they're looking for this perfect deal, but that just doesn't exist. It's, you can make deals better than maybe the next person, and that's how you would differentiate yourself. But there's no perfect, and it's a case of does it meet your criteria? Work out what your criteria are. Does it meet that? Does it stack? How sure are you of the numbers? If interest rates did go up by a couple of percent, could you cope with it? If utilities go up, if you had a void for 2 or 3 months, could you cope with it? If the answer is yes, then just get on with it and get it done. It's
And almost kind of, I don't want to say just use that money, but use it as a springboard to the next thing, because just
totally.
going through that process is it's not necessarily about that first deal. It's about just the momentum it gives you and the confidence and the belief that actually this can be done. And then you get hope that, whatever your goals are, whether it's leaving the day job or the extra income, that it works, it's real. And then that gives you what you need to go on further in the journey. And I think it's interesting actually how you've gone about the different strategies, because some people, they say, focus on one strategy until successful. FO, focus on one course until successful, the acronym isn't it? But for me personally, it's always been about the deal. It's been about diversification. And hey, if it's a good deal and it stacks, like, why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah, I totally agree.
So is that how you've gone it? Because you've gone through a few different strategies there.
Yeah, and I think I probably got that from you as well. But yeah, no, I agree
Probably.
more. I think if the deal stacks, I started off and I had a clear idea of cash flow through HMOs, got a couple of HMOs and thought, well, these are quite a lot of work. And then at the time, I think I was looking to buy one more HMO. So I looked around, and so I think it even came up on Rightmove, and it was advertised. It was a strange advert, and it had, sort of 5 bedrooms, and it was a house, and it was potential for an HMO, and it was this, that, and the other. And when I went around to have a look at it was actually 3 flats in a block, which again, I'd sort of read a little bit about blocks of flats and thought, well, wonder what that sounds quite interesting. Had a look at this one, and it was what so one two flats were occupied, one was in a real mess and needed some work and not a very good layout. So I thought, and this is another good one. If you can buy somewhere that's actually got tenants in, then you know you've got, it might not be the most rent you can get, but at least you've got some money coming in, so you can cover your initial financing until you either do some other work, put the rent up, do whatever. But you've got some income from day one, so that's always a little bonus and worth factoring in. So the it was three flats in a block, excuse me. And so I set to work. So the first one was empty, but was in a relatively good condition. That was upstairs. So I gave that a quick refurb, tidied it up. Didn't I think I put a new boiler in and decorated it. So didn't spend a huge amount of money. Got that rented out. The one bedroom flat on the ground floor had a tenant in who, before I bought it, didn't have a contract, and it was all in a bit of a mess. So going through the legals, got him to sign a contract, and that was all fine. But he was a hoarder, and he shouldn't really have been living by himself. And I didn't realize quite how bad it was, but I'll come on to that in a second. And then the third flat was had the garden. It was at the side, but the layout was awful. So that's where I spent a fair bit of money on that one and reconfigured it, turned it into, it's a smallish one bedroom flat, but it's really nice. And that's actually just had its second or third tenant in there now, and popped around there the other day, and it's really, really nice the way that they've maximized the space. So that was then, that took, while the two flats were generating revenue, I then did the refurbishment of the third flat, and then got that rented out. And then unfortunately had to evict the tenant from the ground floor. Realistically, the council should have been supported living or what have you. But that took quite a while. And again, the legal process in the UK isn't great for supporting this type of thing. So, but he left, cleared out all of the boxes and belongings and what have you, and then did a fairly not huge refurb, but he must have been smoking about 40 or 50 cigarettes a day, so the place was horrible. So that took quite a while, and that's now been rented out. So I've got these three flats in the block, added value, remortgaged, split the titles so they've got individual mortgages, and maximized the value. And that really gave me a real incentive to do that again, because I saw how I could actually get a similar cash flow to the HMO, but with buy-to-let levels of management. So it was the real sweet spot of for me as to how I could maximize the returns, pull the money out, because you're getting individual mortgages, and then once they are up and running, especially if you're doing a refurb, then there's nothing really to go wrong. So it's perfect, and get good tenants, and then you're fine. So, and that's what I've repeated that a few times now, especially in North Wales, where there's tends to be a fair amount of stock available that landlords are either selling or, for one reason or another. So yeah, I've definitely found that to be a bit of a niche.
Yeah, it's definitely a sweet spot. It's finding those type of deals, isn't it? But once you
Yeah.
know what you're looking for, suddenly they start kind of popping up everywhere and you're
Oh,
telling people about
totally,
it.
totally. It's yeah, again, get yourself out there. If people see that you're active, people see that you're doing things, and you've got, if you'd have just been standing on the sidelines watching, you wouldn't have known, half of the opportunities that have come my way wouldn't have happened, because people wouldn't have just realized what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, what's next then? So what does the plan look like for the next couple of years?
So I've set myself a target. So I've got all of my current projects are all done now. So I've been trying to, so that was the end of last year. Everything's rented out. I've got a couple of I'm just trying to sort of go through my portfolio and make sure that everything's maximized. So I've got a couple of things to do there. I've got a piece of land that I mentioned that's actually part of the we moved house in the summer, and the garden has got a fairly big plot at the back. So that's something I'm applying for planning permission. I've got, and then I need to decide whether I build that out myself or whether I sell it with planning. So that's something to do. Another block of flats that I bought recently has also got a parcel of land with it. So when I split the titles for those, I'll have the piece of land. It's in a it's right on the seafront, so which is good and bad. Good in terms of it's in a great location, but bad in terms of getting planning. The local council are not too keen, but I think I was chatting to a planning consultant. I think they might change the rules at the end of last year. So any money that's been spent on any sea defences has to be taken into account when by the planning department. And they've just spent millions on sea defences. So fingers crossed that that could be quite positive. So those are the ongoing things. I've set myself a goal of buying 6 properties this year for social housing. So that's what I'm looking around for. So that's what I'm busy telling everyone I'm interested in. And maybe a couple.
Well, you're telling a lot of people right now, so that's great.
Yeah. So if anyone hears about anything, North Wales, that's my or Chester, that's the area.
Great. Yeah. Okay. And so looking for social housing and investors as well.
Yeah, always looking for investors. If anyone's keen to know more, I'm happy to chat about how I've raised finance, about the offer that I've got. I've got a website you can check out, see some of my projects, and I'm always happy to talk to anyone. If you want to invest some money, that would be fantastic.
Great. Well, where can people find out more about you and what you're up to?
So I'm pretty active on social media. I set myself a goal, which again I thought was not really sustainable, but I was going to post something every day on social media, and I started that pretty over a year ago, and I've been pretty consistent. There's been days where I haven't been, a bit distracted or what have you, but if you go to on Instagram, Fresh Space Living, that's the name of my company, also the website freshspaceliving.co.uk, then you can see what I'm up to and what I'm doing.
Right, so that's Fresh Space, FRESH.
Correct, Space. Fresh Space.
So I'll put the links to all of that in the show notes for anyone who wants to connect.
And
we look forward to seeing what the next couple of years, the next stage brings for you. And I'm really excited for you. It's been an absolute pleasure to watch you from the sidelines on the journey and see just the progress you've made. And just achieving the goals and getting out the day job is phenomenal. So thank you for sharing your story.
I really, really appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, for everyone who is a listener today, if you are looking to subscribe, then click the link in the show notes for your free 30-day trial. And we look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks, guys.